The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station, the university, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this show, visit kuci.org. You're listening to 88.9 KUCI in Irvine. This is In the Garden with your host, Bill Brooks, a University of California master gardener. You've heard many times on this show that plants don't like to have their feet, which means that they don't like to have their roots wet. In fact, we've told you that wet feet or wet roots even kills plants. Well, today we'll be talking about aquatic plants, which can have their feet wet. And we're very fortunate to have master gardener and aquatic plant expert John Kim back with us today. Welcome back, John. Please tell us a little about your interest in aquatic plants.
Hey, Bill, thanks for having me back. I wouldn't necessarily call myself an expert, but I have about almost 20 years of experience with aquatic plants. Interestingly enough, my background or my interest in plants in general started with aquarium plants or aquatic plants. So I got into that hobby sometime around 2005 or six. So it's been almost 20 years. The kind of origin story or the backstory, I'll keep it short, was if somebody in my circle of friends got an aquarium as a Christmas gift, and he didn't know what to do with it, and he posted on a forum that we were on, saying, "Yeah, I got a 10-gallon tank as a Christmas gift. What should I do with it?" And somebody responded, "Hey, you should try keeping freshwater shrimp." And that totally blew me away because I knew nothing of that hobby. Okay. My dad had aquariums when I was growing up, but you know, as an adult, that was something I had not tried myself. So anyway, I fell into that rabbit hole of looking into shrimp and their care, and that kind of naturally led me down a path where planted aquariums came into the picture, because there's a lot of shrimp keepers keep their shrimp and other small nano-sized fauna with planted aquariums, and that totally blew my mind. And if folks haven't Googled or searched for planted aquarium yet, I promise you'll be blown away if you have not seen images of that.
Okay, planted aquarium. That's interesting. I haven't done that, and I've got to do it. And I have a little 10-gallon tank in the garage. So after this interview, I know I'm going to definitely get into aquatic plants. So let's talk about exactly what an aquatic plant is, which I'm assuming is different from a terrestrial plant.
Yeah, so as the name would suggest, aquatic plants have adapted and evolved in different environments where they're either partially or fully submerged, and we're going to kind of get into the nuts and bolts of what that means. But as you've alluded to, plants don't like being or staying wet, but these particular plants not only tolerate it but thrive in it. And so you know, we'll get into the specifics of how much water they like to be in, et cetera. But that, you know, as the name suggests, that is the main difference. It's plants that can be partially or fully submerged.
Fully submerged. And so it's my understanding that we have three types of aquatic plants, and we have a lot to cover today, and we're going to talk about all three. And those three would be ones that are completely submerged. That means they grow below the waterline. And ones that are immersed, that means their roots are underwater, but their stems and leaves grow out of the water. And finally, we have ones that most people are probably familiar with that float on the surface of the water like a lily. So let's go ahead and start with submerged aquatic plants. Tell us about the characteristics of those, and we'll get into the care and how you go about these plants.
Sure. So submerged plants come in all different shapes and forms and sizes and growth habits. Obviously, reproduction becomes an interesting thing underwater. Most plants above the water will rely on pollinators, etc., to reproduce. Underwater, there are no such things. There's no bees and butterflies and such underwater.
So yeah,
they rely on usually asexual reproduction or divisions. A lot of them grow through rhizomes and things like that. And you know, there's just as many different kinds of underwater plants as there are above the water. So there are stem plants that are kind of more akin to like succulents above ground, where they will vegetatively reproduce, and they are more succulent or plump in their stems or leaves. And then there are others that grow via rhizomes. Some will grow just below the surface of whatever substrate or soil is underneath them. And some will have roots that merely anchor, kind of like we have ferns above ground. There are plants like Anubias and various underwater ferns where they use their roots primarily as an attachment device, and things like that. So some are very flat and paper-like leaves. Some are plump and juicy.
Okay.
Some get very large. Some stay very small. And there are grass types that look like underwater lawns. There's all kinds of fun stuff.
Yeah, and I'm sure, again, if I looked at that underwater plants Google search, I could find plenty of things to look at. I'm going to ask you as we go through, too, just any California natives that, and I imagine in an aquarium, because aquarium is usually tropical, it's heated, that might be something that you can't keep in an aquarium. But anything that's a California native?
Not off the top of my head, especially in our part of Southern California. Uh-huh. We don't have a lot of waterways and such. So, we don't have the natural environment like, say, Florida or Louisiana, or even, you know, anywhere along the East Coast. There's a lot more rivers and tributaries, et cetera, where they have a much bigger variety. I know that we're going to talk about floating plants in a little bit, but there are some that are native to California. There's literally thousands of different kinds throughout the world, and that is one that you can find. One that's a little bit more common, technically not a plant, mosses.
Uh-huh.
So there are a variety of mosses that are native to California that will grow above or along the water's edge.
Perfect. And so tell us about where you grow your aquatic plants. You grow them in an aquarium, in a pond, in a water feature, or all of the above?
Yeah, all of the above.
Okay.
Like I mentioned earlier, the aquarium is kind of where I started. And the unique benefit of an aquarium is that you'll have a profile or a side view of the plants versus a pond.
Yeah.
Generally, you're looking from above down. And so you're going to be very limited to what you can see. But growing the plants in an aquarium setting is almost like you're going snorkeling or scuba diving.
Without getting wet or cold.
One of the fun sayings we have in the hobby is keep your sleeves wet. You do get a little bit wet when you play with these plants.
Yeah, I can imagine that. So if you have an aquarium, this might be a good place to begin with aquatic plants. And many aquariums are freshwater and they're tropical. So please tell us maybe some good plants that someone getting new to the hobby, they're going to pull out the plastic plants and use real plants in the aquarium. Where would be a good place to start?
In terms of plant types or species, the Anubias family of plants are very low maintenance.
Okay.
And what I mean by low maintenance is they're not going to be very picky about water parameters. They're also not going to be too picky with lighting conditions. And they're also a more durable and succulent leaf structure. And so if you do have fish that would be tempted to eat or tug on plants, like let's say goldfish or some type of cichlid, they're going to be a little bit more hardy and tolerate that kind of behavior. So just generally speaking, any of the Anubias type plants are going to be very user-friendly. Also the ferns that I mentioned earlier are kind of in a similar boat. Ferns are a little bit more susceptible to having algae growth on the leaves, but that's not too difficult to manage. But what makes ferns a little bit easier is that they are, again, a little bit more tolerant of varying water conditions and lighting conditions. And they're relatively cheaper to get versus some of the other plants, and they're very easy to find.
So I'd imagine, again, with a fern, if you have algae on it, you could trim off those leaves that have the most algae, and that would probably be one way of controlling it.
You certainly can. You can spot treat by either cutting off the impacted leaves if it's really bad, You can also spot treat with like hydrogen peroxide on a Q-tip sort of thing, because these plants, you can take them out.
Yeah.
So if you've got a plant that's got a bunch of algae starting to grow on it, you can pull it out, treat it, give it a little rinse, and then throw it back into the tank. And then there are also commercially available algicide products that you can put into your aquarium to help cut down on the algae. But, you know, the biggest thing with an aquarium, just in general, not just planted in the tanks, is creating an environment of balance in the water. Normally, if you're having some sort of algae outbreak, there is a root cause or multiple root causes that are creating that scenario. And the goal would be to clean that up and not have to deal with the algae.
Yeah, not. And I know once you get a little bit in, a lot of times the algae easily comes back even after you've cleaned. So
it can.
A lot of times it might even be starting over with new gravel substrate and things like that.
Sure.
So selecting an aquarium plant, would I want to go to the pet store? Would I want to order online or both? Or any tips about getting a plant?
Well, if somebody's looking for just the run-of-the-mill kind of easy stuff, it doesn't really matter where you get it from.
Okay.
Most of these plants are coming from similar sources anyway, and they're not at the store very long. So whether you get them online or your favorite retailer, that's up to the individual buyer. I personally like to encourage people to support their local businesses.
Okay.
You know, like people are very quick to go the convenient route of buying it on their phone or their computer.
Right.
But if you do that, eventually your local stores are going to close down. And those are important resources to have in your local neighborhood. If you need something in a pinch, I mean, you know, Amazon Prime or
yep.
Walmart Plus or whatever, these new services are great. They can get you stuff in a day or two, but sometimes you need things even faster than that. You know, and supporting local business is always a good bet. So we're spoiled in California where there are lots of stores that carry plants. And so if you're wondering if a local pet store or fish store carries aquatic plants, you can call them. I always
suggest. Yeah, and I even noticed too the last time I was in one of the chain pet stores that they had an amazing selection that I don't remember them having before. So, I mean, this is really a new hobby that I think is coming on the forefront, and it's got a lot of people interested. So if I had a 10 to 15 gallon aquarium, how many plants reasonably do you think I could have in that space?
Well, so you're only limited by your imagination, because the plants do come in different shapes and sizes and colors. It's more a matter of what you want out of the aquarium, what you want to look at in your house. I have a lot of friends that are very hardcore what's considered nature aquarium types, where they want it to be some sort of biotope or a very natural looking scene within their aquarium, and they will kind of poo-poo on people that want to put a Pokemon in their aquarium or SpongeBob. But at the end of the day, you know, if you've got a kid or a 35-year-old at the house that wants to see SpongeBob in a fish tank, that's wonderful. Throw a SpongeBob in there with the pineapple hut and some live plants around it, right?
Yeah, that would look awesome, I think.
I encourage people to just kind of do whatever they think in their own imagination is going to be fun and enjoyable, and not to take it too seriously and not worry about some of the negativity that people might share.
You mentioned that one of the tips, we'll talk about aquarium tips for plant care. You mentioned that hydrogen peroxide on a Q-tip, after you remove the plant from the tank, that will help control algae. Any other tips on aquarium plant care at all?
What I suggest to people that are kind of entering the hobby is to take it slow.
Okay.
A lot of people really get excited and they go out and spend a ton of money on really high powered lights and all this fancy stuff, but the tank itself is not ready for that. In an enclosed or controlled environment like an aquarium, there are various bacterias and microfauna that need to get established to help bring a bit of balance and harmony into the underwater environment. That includes the filter, that includes the rocks and the substrate and all of these other things. And people will oftentimes get really frustrated because they think that if they spend a bunch of money, they can kind of shortcut the process. And unfortunately, yeah. that's not mm. normally the case. And so my recommendation is to take it slow. Generally speaking, the first 2 months, things are going to happen. There's going to be spikes of nutrients and other things that may happen. Things may die. Things may unroot. Things may move. Filters may get plugged or clogged for whatever reason. So there's going to be a lot of trial and error for at least 2 months. So I always kind of tell new hobbyists to be prepared for that, because otherwise you're going to get disappointed. My very first aquarium that I ever bought as an adult, I bought it off Craigslist almost 20 years ago from a mom who bought a tank for their kid. And basically she told me, we've had this thing for a month and we can't keep anything alive. It's a piece of junk. I just want to get rid of it. Yeah. I happily took it on because I had friends in my corner telling me, you know, once you set this thing up, give it 2 or 3 months before you put your first living animal in there, whether it's a fish or a shrimp, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Give the tank and the environment time to kind of establish and balance itself.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So I'm not going to have soil in my aquarium. So please talk about the growing substrate. And I know there's, you know, variety of gravels and sands you can get for an aquarium. So what do I ideally want for
my plants? Going to depend on the fauna that you're keeping, whatever. Okay. So whether it's fish or shrimp or snails or all of the above or turtles, and then also the type of plants you'll have. Mm-hmm. Some plants have extensive root systems or they're heavy feeders through their roots, so they do need a higher nutrient substrate or media. Others, like the anubias or ferns I mentioned earlier, rely less through their roots for nutrients and such, and so it doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah, they're going to get the nutrients through the water. Yeah.
So some of the kind of entry-level, easy stuff that you could use, any kind of gravel, and gravel and sand and stone is only differentiated by size.
Yes.
And so, you know, that you can get it at Home Depot. You can get river rock and sand and such from Home Depot. Give it a good rinse until the water's clear when it runs through it. You can use that for a lot of plants. And there are tutorials online and YouTube and such where they kind of explain how and when to do that. As you mentioned, there are commercially available products that are both inert, which is kind of mostly a lava rock type material. Okay. That's a little bit cheaper. And then, you know, once you start getting into some of the more demanding plants, you can buy commercially available specialized soils for planted aquariums that cost upwards of $30 or $40 for a bag of substrate.
Oh my. About
20 pounds. Yeah.
No, you'd really need to get into it.
And it adds up really fast. Yeah.
So what are the benefits of live plants in my aquarium? How does that benefit the ecosystem?
Well, I think you and I are a little bit biased as master gardeners. We just like plants. So they're pretty to look at. They're fun, right? And so if folks are kind of Googling planted tanks and such, they'll see some of the underwater like dioramas you can create using live plants. And they're just absolutely gorgeous. So they're very pleasing to the eye. But if we're talking a little bit more functionality, plants do help break down various nutrients in the aquarium itself. So, you know, you can think of it as a natural filter for the water. If you've got smaller fish or even larger fish, they oftentimes will use planted environments to spawn and lay eggs, mm-hmm. or to reproduce or seek shelter. Some fish or turtles will also eat plants. So earlier we briefly talked about floating plants. So a lot of floating plants serve as food. For like goldfish in particular, really like eating floating plants. Turtles will eat floating plants. So they could be a food source as well, and things like that. So
And too, the plants are going to be somewhat of an oxygen source because it's a byproduct of photosynthesis. So you get extra oxygen, which is always good for your fish. And I know here in California, as even in the rest of the United States, there's been concern with invasive aquatic plants taking over our natural waterways. So any tips that you can give us with not allowing that to happen if you're keeping aquarium plants? So what would we avoid doing, I guess I should ask?
Yeah, so as with anything that's invasive, you want to be mindful of where you're discarding things. So, you know, if you live near a park or something like that, you know, you should generally speaking never throw things just out to your driveway or the gutter.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the safer thing is, of course, to just throw it in the trash. Or if you've got a green waste bin, you can throw it in there and it'll go become compost somewhere. And that's the best way to dispose of it. I'll admit I used to flush stuff down the toilet too, but I've stopped doing that. That's generally a bad idea because that'll make its way into various treatment
right.
plants and such. And that's not good for anything or anybody. So, the best way to do it is just throw it in the garbage.
Remember too that dumping something down the gutter is going to go into the storm drainage system, and
that's right.
It can reproduce in standing water, and then can from there cross into our waterways. So that's just a caution with just when you clean your aquarium, avoid where you dump it. And I personally like to use my aquarium water when I'm doing a water change. I use that to water my plants because that's got a lot of nitrogen and other micronutrients for plants. So it's an excellent way to fertilize at the same time.
Absolutely.
So any other tips that you can tell us about submerged aquatic plants?
Again, I'm a little bit biased because I really like club culture.
Okay.
So I belong to a lot of clubs and organizations. So there are many aquarium clubs. Some of them do specialize in aquatic plants. So
good to know.
You just join an online group of some sort, I would encourage people to seek other hobbyists for information instead of just relying on TikTok or YouTube or something like that. You know, go talk to another human being, learn from them. And be inspired by them.
Yeah, is there any Facebook groups that deal with that you know of, or even an Instagram group you can become
sure,
a part of?
There's quite a few. The larger organization in the United States is called the Aquatic Gardeners Association, or
okay.
AGA, and they hold a conference every year. Unfortunately, they're not in California, but they've got a great newsletter that, you know, I'm a part of that club, and I get the newsletter. Actually, 10 years ago, I was on the editing team for that newsletter as well. So that's a great group. It's a large group. They host an annual aquascaping competition where people from all over the world will submit photos of their planted aquariums, and they get judged and win awards and such things like that. And then more locally within Southern California, there is a group. I actually help run that group, but it's called the Southern California Aquatic Plant Enthusiasts.
Okay.
So the acronym is SCAPE, SCAPE, which is a fantastic name. And so we have monthly meetings, and we nerd out about aquarium plants, and we share plants with each other and other aquarium-related goods. And so I encourage people, that's the best way to learn. Don't ask ChatGPT, go ask a human.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And, you know, you get so much out of doing that, and you meet people and you find out about it. And the beauty of the aquatic plants, the submersed ones we're talking about, they're not restricted to climates because there's obviously, as you know, things that won't grow in Southern California and other things that do. If you want a rhododendron, for example, you're not going to grow one here. But aquatic plants, you know, you can talk to people around the nation, around the world for that matter, and learn things about them because you're setting up your own environment in an aquarium. So that's another cool thing about today's topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's actually easier than people think to manipulate that environment as well. So, you know, the obvious thing or easy thing to do is changing the lighting condition by changing the type of light or intensity of the light. And that'll open up different types of plants, but also the temperature. I know earlier we mentioned tropical plants, but in an aquarium environment, it's very easy to throw a heater in there and make it a little bit warmer.
Yep.
Or on the other end of the spectrum, if you live in Palm Springs and it's always hot, you can get a chiller for your aquarium and cool the water down and open up the opportunities to have a colder environment as well.
Yeah, you definitely can. So let's move on to aquatic plants that are immersed. And again, these are going to have their roots in the water, And the plant, for the most part, is going to be growing above the surface of the water. So what kind of water feature do I need if I want to grow immersed aquatic plants?
A lot of aquatic plants, or I'll even venture to say most aquatic plants are considered riparian. Uh-huh. So they live in that environment that crosses from dry to wet. So during a flooding season or the rainy season, they'll grow underwater. Then during the dry season, and this is going to be different times of the year for different parts of the world, but during the dry season, they're now immersed. They're grown above the water. And so there is a huge variety of plants that behave or have developed in this environment. And so it's up to you. Like, you can take that plant, and if you want to keep it and display it as a submerged plant, you just keep trimming it and cut off the pieces that get to the water's edge or above, and you can replant that. Like, so for example, if it's a stem plant, you just cut the top of the stem and plant that back into the soil or substrate, and it'll root from that cutting point and just start all over again. Or if you have the space above the tank, and this has become very popular in the last 10 years or so, it started kind of picking up, and now it's very, very common to see actually more shallow tanks that allow either the hardscape, I'm using some jargon here, but So the hardscape of an aquarium is going to be things like the rocks or driftwood features that create kind of the bones or structure of a design. That'll be sticking up and above the water's edge, and then you can allow the plants to grow through the water, up and above the water line, or if you've got things like mosses, it can grow along that hardscape, on that hardscape directly. Okay. And a lot of the aquarium manufacturers have now developed aquariums or tanks specifically for that kind of setup. So there are terrariums where they'll hold water in the lower section. So ExoTerra, Zoomed's kind of the big brands. They'll have like a 4 to 6 inch section of the bottom of the terrarium where you can keep small fish and plants and such. And then the rest of the enclosure above is enclosed with doors or screen. And you can have various plants, orchids even, growing up and around that enclosure, and have yourself a mini little rainforest setup. And then there are other aquariums that are not enclosed, but that have an extended back or sides to allow the plants to kind of have a more safe or secure area. So it's not flopping over behind the tank, right? So some of them are sold as turtle tanks, and you can kind of Google and look that stuff up. But there are other riparium-style tanks now available commercially as well.
So you said orchids. You said that an orchid will actually... is submersed. Some of them are submersed aquatic plants. That would be extremely cool to be able to do.
Orchids are super fun. So you can do orchids growing right at the water's edge, because some, you know, a lot of orchids, terrestrial orchids especially, will grow where it's very wet all the time, and so they don't mind that environment. So being in a very high humid environment, especially the miniature orchids, do really well. There are lots of carnivorous plants that are bog plants that also do really well in that kind of setup. There are actually some carnivorous plants that are fully submerged, grow completely underwater, and their carnivory is in their roots. And then there are floating carnivorous plants as well, where they have these bladder structures that just float in the water column and catch little microorganisms that are swimming through. So it's very fun. But
it's a
deep rabbit hole.
And John and I did our previous show, and you can look it up on our website, was a carnivorous plant show. And so you're telling me that you've got aquatic carnivorous plants.
Absolutely.
So that would be something fun to get into for people. And that's what's so cool about just the hobby of gardening, is there's so many aspects and ways that we can go about doing things. So we are at the middle of our show right now. And the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station, the university, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this show, visit KUCI.org. You're listening to 88.9 KUCI in Irvine, and this is In the Garden, and I'm your host, Bill Brooks. We're talking about aquatic plants with our guest, John Kim, and we're on immersed aquatic plants right now, and I do want to talk about if you had, say, an outside pond or water feature of some kind, talk a little bit about the immersed aquatic plants that would grow out there.
So, depending on where you are in Southern California, a lot of the plants will kind of suffer a little bit during our colder winters.
Okay.
I know, like at my house, it'll get into the 40s on a regular basis for a couple of months, and so a lot of the plants aren't happy in that temperature. But it's not hard to cover them up, or you just select plant species that do well. So a lot of like lilies and such, not just the like pond lilies, but irises and lilies. They're larger plants that do well with their feet wet, like we were saying earlier, roots wet. The irises and such, you know, they don't mind it either. And so, you know, it just it kind of depends on the plant. And there are very many available that will do fine year-round outside.
So I might, if I have a pond or a water feature, I might actually get the plant and I would keep it in its container so that it's got its substrate, and then it would be lowered into the water where the roots and, say, bottom part of the stem are in the water and the leaf structure is out.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, there's, like, taro plants are quite popular. And there are actually some trees that grow in riparian areas as well that you can kind of miniature. As you know, my other hobby is bonsai.
Yeah.
But, you know, things like a bald cypress or a water elm, these are plants that grow with a part of their or the trunk where their roots wet. And so you can integrate that. But, yeah, generally speaking, a smart way to do it is to keep it in a container or a pot, and you can dunk that whole thing into some sort of water feature.
Okay, and that would be something I'm sure I could find online, some specialized nurseries that would sell me that kind of a plant.
Absolutely, yeah. And some of our local nurseries as well have sections outside for water plants and water features.
Yeah, and I just have to look around. Any, if I wanted to learn more about these, any good websites or places to go, or is there a specific, and I know we're going to talk about clubs at the end, but a specific immersed water plant club at all?
Not that I know of, at least not here, not in Southern California. There are some pond societies or water feature clubs, but I can't think of one that's in Southern California. The internet's a big place.
Facebook's it sure is. Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's definitely lots of plant nerds out there of various types.
Okay. So many immersed plants, they obviously need water. So just let's talk a little bit about how much of the plant needs to be immersed and how much needs to be above. So if you could give us some examples or talk a little bit about that, that would be great.
Yeah, and this is going to, again, be very dependent on the type of plant. But the plant will tell you, if that makes sense. A lot of them, if you're looking at a potted plant, generally speaking, the entire thing up to the top lip of the plant, of the pot, can be underwater. I would, in most cases, not completely submerge the pot because the soil will be tempted to float away.
Okay.
And so just below the lip of the upper lip of the pot would be ideal if your plant already comes in a pot. If it's a smaller plant like the Anubias or ferns we were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. That get planted directly into some sort of water feature or structure, they're not going to be picky. You can what will happen is the leaves, a lot of these plants have two different sets of leaves, some that grow underwater and some that grow above. And so if your water level is too high, it'll just have more of the aquatic leaves of that plant versus if the plant is planted a little bit above the water line, most of the time, then it'll just have more of the immersed form leaves growing on that plant. So the plant will adjust to whatever conditions you put it in.
Okay,
for the
and
most
yeah,
part.
and then I could adjust it as well if I
That's right.
wanted more of the upper leaves. You mentioned earlier that in our cool California winters, you might get some damage from the cool weather, and so I'm assuming when the weather warms up, you trim that damaged part off and the plant rejuvenates.
Yeah, it'll melt back. It'll die back. Whatever portion gets cold damaged, it'll normally turn brown, and it'll just kind of melt away. And then in the spring, when it warms up, it'll just pick up right where it left off.
Okay, and you also mentioned propagation, and it sounds like most of these plants can be propagated just from a cutting.
That's true. Very, very many of them do just vegetatively reproduce. It's really hard to hybridize or create new varieties because of the flowering habit that's required to do that. It's hard to mimic. They just reproduce a lot easier through cuttings and division. And so that's why the variety is limited. The orchids, which is the largest group of plants, are very promiscuous. And so they breed very easily, and that's why there's such a big variety of them, or just flowering plants in general, whether we're talking roses or tulips. But aquatic plants don't have that opportunity as much. There are certainly aquatic plants that do flower, but it's a very small percentage.
And so we're out again with the water feature here. Standing water versus circulating water, where I have a little bit of a waterfall in my pond. So certain plants for certain environments, can you talk a little bit about whether I need circulation or whether still water works or how I could do it?
So there are bog plants or pond plants that won't mind a more stagnant or still water situation, but for the most part, plants do need the water to be moving. Now, how much of that water movement is necessary is going to, again, vary plant to plant. But water movement is important because that's going to provide a gas exchange. Even underwater, plants do need gas exchange, and that's usually delivered by moving water. And so that's going to help cut down on issues with algae or pockets of the water feature aquarium where things aren't moving around. And that could kind of lead to anaerobic conditions and other bad juju that you want to avoid.
So I could get even if I have a pond without a waterfall, I could get some kind of a circulating pump, for
That's
example,
right.
that would just keep the water moving underneath the surface. Okay, tell us a little bit about the pH and nutrients of the water that I would need to be concerned with.
Most plants like it neutral, so around 7 to slightly acidic. That's kind of where most plants are going to be happy. Once you start getting a little bit more technical, or what we call, the more advanced or harder plants, generally speaking, those plants like softer water, so lower nutrient water, lower hardness, and slightly lower pH. And then there are, on the opposite extreme, there are some plants that do like harder, more mineralized water, but those plants aren't as popular in the hobby. So generally speaking, if you can get it 6.5, 7 pH, you're fine, which is actually a little bit lower than most of our tap water. And so there are different ways to, kind of bring that down a little bit. But I mentioned hardscapes earlier. A lot of different driftwoods will actually help buffer the water and bring the pH down a little bit. Some of the commercially available substrates and soils have a natural pH buffering effect as well. And that's why you pay the big bucks to have the good stuff.
Yeah, good to know. So I hadn't thought of the driftwood. Now that's something I learned because I was thinking you could just, buy a solution to put in your pond, but it sounds like there's once you get into it, you'll learn a lot of different ways to do
That's right.
this. So, talk a little bit about how small of a water feature. So, we've talked about aquariums, but if I have a little outdoor space, how small of a space could I use for an immersed plant? Do you see anything in really small spaces?
I've grown things in a 1 gallon bucket.
Oh, cool.
I've actually got a few 5 gallon buckets now that are just kind of holdovers for some plants that I have outside. So, when does a bucket become a pond? I don't know. But You know, I actually had this discussion a couple weeks ago with some of my friends, saying, you know, if I have a 5-gallon bucket with some mosquito fish and some plants outside, is that an aquarium? What is it? You know, and they said, oh, that doesn't count as an aquarium. That's a pond. You know, it's like, okay. To each his own. But I've seen very small things, or you can go even smaller. A friend of mine creates miniature he buys these little ramen bowls or rice bowls from Daiso for a couple of bucks. Put some lava rock in there, plants that, and puts water in it. And it's, you know, it's a little mini, I guess you can call it a pond. I don't know, water.
Yeah,
a little,
yeah, that would be fun. That definitely be fun, it's especially for kids. That'd
Absolutely.
Be great.
Or an office desk or a bookshelf. But yeah, that's something.
Because it's a conversation
really
starter.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's interesting to know. So, you know, with anything, when you start getting into a hobby, don't be afraid to try, and also try your research and reach out to people that have already done things. And I'm sure you can find a lot out as you go through this and get into this hobby, because you're certainly inspiring me to think outside the box with another whole avenue of gardening that I haven't really pursued. So let's move on to our floating aquatic plants, and most people are probably familiar with water lilies and their beautiful blooms. What do I need to know to grow water lilies?
They are dormant. They do go dormant. So if it starts to melt in the winter and the leaves kind of go away, it's not dying. Don't throw it out. I've seen some people panic. But they come in. So the visual feature of the water lilies are usually the bloom, the flower, and that's what breeders are working on right now. Where they have been is creating different size, color, shape flowers, much like orchids, I guess. And so, you know, they do get pretty big. They do like it a little bit warmer. So if somebody's listening from San Bernardino, it's probably too cold up there. But if you're in the Orange County area, which I assume most listeners are, they do very well here. Just be mindful that in the winter it's going to look kind of ratty and not so great.
Yeah, what's my color palette of the blooms on water lilies?
Oh, it's a rainbow.
Is it everything really?
From white to red to orange and pink and no blue. Flowers and blue don't do.
No, they don't. You're
not yet. Yeah. But aside from that, yeah, purples, pinks, oranges, all of that stuff. And again, different sizes and shapes and number of petals and all of that kind of jazz.
And a water lily is going to work again in more of a pond, and it does need require some circulation, as you said. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, and it's a bigger plant, especially because when the leaves come out in the spring, you know, those are the solar panels collecting energy from the sun. That's what's going to feed the bulb down below in the either buried or in a pot. And so those leaves can be very big, dinner plate sized or bigger. And so in order to accommodate that, you're going to need a larger water feature.
And so the actual bulb structure is going to live in a pot that's got some substrate around it, I'm assuming.
Right. That's how most people grow them. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're going to have it potted. And then speaking of mosquito control, it sounds like you use mosquito fish for your mosquito control. Is that correct?
That's part of the regimen. So, again, because we're in California and vector control is very cognizant of the mosquito issues here, you can get free mosquito fish from your local vector control office. And that's one kind of a natural biological way to control, or help control mosquitoes. But I also use mosquito bits, which is a bacteria that specifically targets mosquito larvae, and so it breaks up the reproduction cycle in that matter.
So talk a little bit about mosquito bits and where I might go about getting those, because I know, you know, sometimes people are concerned even if they have just a little bit of standing water.
Yeah.
And
so
I guess that would work.
That's right. So mosquito bits and dunks are the same thing, just in a different size.
Okay.
So if you've got a pond or a pool or something larger, you know, let's just say 50 gallons or bigger, the mosquito dunks are going to be the economical way to do it. But because I tend to have a lot of water trays or standing water in smaller pools and such, I buy mosquito bits, which are just little crumbles of the same product. And I found that shopping online is the cheapest way. I get a nice big jar about once a year, $20 or $30, and you can get that from whatever online retailer. You can buy them at your local big box store or home store, but it generally costs a little bit more. But if you're in a hurry and need it in a pinch, it's a great product.
Okay, so we want to look for mosquito bits.
Correct.
When we're looking for that for mosquito control, because I know a lot of our listeners will be worried about that. And that's something that I guess if you have koi, do you know if koi eat mosquito larvae? Do they feed on that at all?
They can, but they're not very good at it.
Okay, so you want to go with a mosquito fish if you want a fish or those bits. And that won't harm your fish, I trust.
That's correct. Okay. The mosquito bits are completely safe for the bees, the birds, your dogs or cats or anything else.
Yeah, because it's a bacteria and it targets it. So that's the best kind of integrated pest management we want, obviously. Yeah. So a lot of times, too, and I want to talk a little bit about many botanical gardens that have ponds, either feature Victoria Amazonica or Victoria Boliviana growing in them. And these are the giant water lilies that can have leaves up to 10 feet in diameter. And the leaf will even support up to 70 pounds, a small animal or a small child. So do you know of any botanical gardens here in Southern California that feature those particular plants?
So all of the bigger gardens locally, the Huntington, the LA Arboretum, they all have various water lilies on display. Even a lot of the public parks, like in LA and such, I think it's Echo Park, or anyway, there's a large park where every year the water lilies come up. And
I think you're right. That's Echo.
Yeah. Yeah, but more closer to home, actually, the Arboretum at CSU Fullerton, at Cal State Fullerton, they've got some really cool, very rare water lilies there as well. So if anybody finds themselves on the campus of Fullerton, that's something worth checking out.
Okay, and that's really close and local. And I know I've seen the Victoria Amazonica and Boliviana in Florida, and then also again too in Pennsylvania, and they're just an amazing water lily because they've got just this huge, huge leaf on them, and definitely fun. Something, it's one of my favorite plants overall, just to see. So you did talk earlier in the show a little bit about organizations. So are there any other organizations that you would like to highlight where our listeners could learn more about aquatic plants?
So I'm a little bit biased here again with the club that I'm a part of, which again is called SCAPE. So we meet primarily in the Orange County area. On odd numbered months, we meet at the Balearic Community Center in Costa Mesa. And then on even numbered months, we have different fish stores that will host us throughout Southern California. So we hop around. The other fish organization in Orange County is called COAST. It's a California Organization of Aquatic Show Tropicals, I believe is what the acronym stands for. But it's primarily a fish club, but a lot of those members also...
They grow the plants,
Yeah, plants and such. But on a bigger scale, so I mentioned ADG, the Aquatic... or AGA, Aquatic Gardeners Association in the United States. And then the international group. One of the large manufacturers that helped grow this hobby over the last 20 or 30 years has been a Japanese company called Aqua Design Amano. And Amano is the gentleman who started the company. He passed away a few years ago, but his company, ADA, hosts an annual aquascaping competition that's world class, literally. So hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of people now, submit photos of their aquariums of various sizes that are planted for an international layout competition. And every year in Japan in the fall, they host a large awards ceremony where they hand out some cash prizes, but more it's for the bragging rights.
And
what happens is the people that receive awards or rank highly end up becoming professionals that do installations for zoos and museums and lawyers' offices and things like that. So it's really cool to see who's up and coming in the art spectrum, if you will, of the hobby. And that's through ADA or Aqua Design Amano.
Aqua Design Amano. So let's kind of recap. So you mentioned SCAPE. What's that acronym stand for?
Southern California aquatic plant enthusiasts.
Okay. And so if I did Scape in my Google search, I imagine that would be come up. And
it
then
would, yeah.
And then Coast is, oh boy, I can't remember that one. I know. Is it California Organization of Aquatic? You'll have to tell me what Coast is.
See, I'm gonna look it up so I don't mess it up.
Okay.
Let me see. But yeah, the website is coastclub.com.
Coast Club.
Or coastclub.org. Yeah, but it's I believe it's California's oh my gosh, what is the O? Hold on. Well, California Organization of Aquatic Shows Tropicals.
Yeah, did
California's Organization of
Aquatic Shows
Show Tropicals. They stretched really hard to get that acronym.
Okay, that would be and imagine it would be down on a Google search, but you can find it because that gives our listeners, we'd like to give these resources because I know people when they're done listening to the show are going to have so many ideas to go on and just get excited about this hobby.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think so too. And so I would like to close with this. So we haven't talked much about saltwater, and I think this is a good closing just to say that many people call the seaweed that grows in the ocean off our coast plants. And they're not. They're algaes. And the only thing that marine algae has in common with organisms that we call plants is they both photosynthesize. But they're completely different organisms. But there are several species of plants that do grow in salt water in the ocean. One in particular is eelgrass. And eelgrass is found in bays and estuaries. And then there's several species of surfgrass that live in the ocean water in Southern California that are plants. I've not heard of anyone, even in an aquarium, that grows these plants in captivity. Is that true?
There are saltwater planted aquariums. But as you've alluded to, they're actually mostly algaes. So macroalgaes are algaes that have larger, quote-unquote, plant-like structures.
Yeah.
So like you were saying, the seaweed. But there are also smaller varieties and colorful varieties. So there are algaes that grow purple and pink, and they will attach to another surface. They're not free-floating.
Yeah.
They'll grow directly on the rock or on a sand bed. And they look fantastic. And if people do a search for macroalgae aquarium, they'll see some really, really colorful and creative examples of saltwater planted aquariums, even though they're technically not a plant. But yeah, that's super fun, you know. And then you kind of cross into that line of, then what about coral? You know, is a coral is photosynthesizing through little microorganisms that live there in a symbiotic relationship. The coral itself is not photosynthesizing, but anyway, that's a whole.
Yeah, the coral's an animal. And that means, you know, that it has to ingest, and it lives off of algae that grows within it, and that has to photosynthesize. So it's an interesting symbiotic relationship.
It is.
That I know saltwater aquarists can definitely get into. And if your algae dies, your coral's going to die. And that's the important thing. If you're along our coast visiting Orange County beaches, surfgrass is very common, especially at low tide. It grows maybe about a foot tall, and it looks a lot like grass, and it's these strands. You'll often see it washed up in the beach rack when you're down walking along the water's edge. So look for surfgrass, two or three different species. It flowers to reproduce. It also reproduces with rhizomes, and it likes to live on the rocky surface because it can kind of get a grip. It also will root down into the sand, too, and it's a very cool plant, but I don't know anybody that's growing that. So,
well, in addition to that, the other fun fact is with the seagrasses kind of growing back and coming back along our coastline, that's actually brought back a lot of turtles, sea turtles. That kind of follow and feed on the seagrasses as well. And so there's a relatively new organization based out of San Diego that specializes in conservation of sea turtles that come to our shores. And
yeah.
There's a lot more than most people realize.
But no, you're right. I have snorkeled with a sea turtle in La Jolla.
Yeah, which is incredible because
Yeah.
that was not the case 20, 30 years
No,
ago.
you're right. And I have seen sea turtles not under, I've seen their heads pop up at Doheny State Beach here in Orange County.
Yeah, and they conduct counts. So volunteers go out on boats and count these all along our coastline now.
Yeah, these are greens, and we're right about temperature wise, our ocean is right about at their high range, about
right.
as high as lower temperatures they can take. So this is about as far north as they will come, but it is something pretty cool. Any last minute thoughts or anything, John?
No, I just want to encourage people to try it. If you haven't yet and you're listening, pull your phone out and look up Planted Aquarium, and I promise you will be blown away.
And that's Planted Aquarium. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station, the university, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on the show, visit KUCI.org. You're listening to 88.9 KUCI in Irvine. This is In the Garden, and we've been talking about aquatic plants with our guest, John Kim. Thanks again, John, for joining us today and for sharing all of your knowledge.